Well, good morning. Let's come before our holy God in prayer. Let's pray. Father, this morning we praise you that when the fullness of time had come, you sent forth your Son. You sent forth your Son in time to offer salvation for all time. And now we look forward to the future time when all things will be brought underneath him. And of course, his name is Jesus. Amen. Well, this morning I wanted to start out a little different. I wanted to start out by giving you a riddle to see if you can figure out what the thing is behind the riddle. So you ready? Let me give you some clues and I'll ask you what you think it is in a couple of minutes. So riddle me this. This thing makes all the difference between producing a noise that is hard on the ears and a beautiful symphony. Yeah. Thank you for that, but it's not you. That's not the word I'm looking for anyway. It also makes all the difference between a good or bad investment decision. The difference between whether you will make millions or maybe even head towards insolvency. What's more, in sport, let's say a sport like baseball, it makes all the difference between hitting a home run or being struck out and sent back to the bench to lament. And I could keep on giving you more and more clues, but let me give you just one more example. It makes all the difference between a delicious meal and a terrible meal. In other words, the difference between a meal that you really want to eat and a meal that has been cooked by me. No, seriously, recently I was watching a show with our kids that is called America's Worst Cooks. Have you ever seen it? Well, let me give you the crux of it. For an hour, we watch people drop stuff and burn stuff and over-season stuff and spit out stuff. You know, I like this show. It makes me feel really good about myself. I was having a great time until our youngest looked at me and said words to the effect, "Hey, Dad, do you reckon your cooking is worse than those contestants?" You know, if you ever get a chance to ask my family about the time I made monkey porridge, please do. That's right, the name helps you visualize it. I'm even willing to give you the recipe, but hospitality is not my spiritual gift. And so answer my riddle. What is it? What is the one thing that makes such a big difference in so many instances? Practice. Related to that, timing. That's right. In music, in investing, in cooking, you name it, sport, timing makes all the difference in just about every instance in life. It was the great American musician Miles Davis who once said, "Timing isn't the main thing, it's everything." Timing is so critical when it comes to doing well and finding purpose in life, which is why it was only a matter of time before Solomon had deal with it in his search for meaning, which is precisely what he does today in chapter 3. Today, time is dealt with by Solomon because it too contributes to his existential problem. In chapter 1, Solomon asks the question, why? He asked, why are we here? And then in chapter 2, related to the question why, Solomon asked the question what? He asked, what things can we find meaning in, like possessions and achievements? And today, he moves on to the question, when? And he does that, he moves on to the question when, because if timing is so critical in life, you know, if timing is so critical to getting things right, then it adds to our existential dilemma, because how do you know when it is the right time? Friends, that is one of the questions in life. How do you know when it is the right time to decide when you'll take up some study, or you'll start a career, or when it's time to travel instead? How do you know when it's the right time to enter the market and buy a home or purchase that investment? When is the right time to remain single or have the courage to go up to that guy or girl, get married and start a family? Or maybe you're starting to head towards a later season in life. And so when is the right time to retire, downsize, or perhaps in light of this week, maybe even move to a warmer climate? You know, Miles Davis is right. Timing is everything. Every day you are faced with the question when, and the difficulty in answering the question is rivaled only by the enormity of the consequence. Life is neither predictable nor constant, which means it lacks the stability that would otherwise help us to find meaning. This is why today Solomon has to deal with the question when, and as he does, it will help all of us realize again why every one of us needs Jesus. Jesus, the one who, in a world of constant change, Hebrews 13:8 reminds us, is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Well, I think it's fair to say that this morning we are dealing with the most famous passage in Ecclesiastes. Verse 1 to 8 in chapter 3, made famous, being turned into a song by the likes of Peter Seeger, rock band The Byrds, and then The Seekers in the 1960s. And after this message, we're going to sing it just like they did. So hats off to our musicians. Here's the album cover from The Byrds, where they sing these 8 verses in their song, Turn. During the week, as I was researching some of these old music videos from The Byrds and The Seekers with some of our musos to see how we might play this, I was like, wow. You know, obviously there's also a time for hairdos and dance moves. And so I asked my dad, you know, what was with the 60s? What were you guys thinking? And he said, well, that's the thing. I don't think any of us were thinking back in the 60s. You know, the world was full of peace, love, and mung beans, and the church was full of liberals. Go figure. And so just like Pete Seeger, The Byrds, and The Seekers later in the service, straight after this sermon, we are going to sing these verses thanks to our hardworking musicians. And rightly so, for grammatically and structurally, these verses read like a song in Hebrew. And not only are these Ecclesiastes' most famous words, for some, they are also the most controversial. I remember hearing of a woman who refused to read this passage when she was asked to at a funeral. She refused to read it, for she was worried it might endorse things like war and killing. But that's not what Solomon is doing. He is not issuing a list of commands. He is listing a state of realities. Let me say that grammatically. These are not imperatives, they are indicatives. They are not authorizations, they are seasons. You know, Solomon is not trying to tell us what it's okay to go out and do. He is telling us, this is how life is. This is what happens to you. You don't dictate the seasons. The seasons dictate to you. And so, for instance, in verse 8, he's not telling us that it's okay to go out and start a war. He is telling us that there will be seasons where we find ourselves at war because this world is fallen. Now, I'm not denying that there is no cause for a just war. For instance, I would support Bonhoeffer's involvement in the assassination attempt on Hitler. And I know that's a really controversial thing to say. I know, you know, this divides a lot of Christians, but for me personally, it just makes a lot of sense trying to take one life to try and save the lives of millions. And so I'm not denying that there is never a cause for a just war. I'm just saying that you should look elsewhere in Scripture if you want the argument to become much stronger that supports it. But that is a time for another sermon. Another reason we can be sure that verses 2 to 8 aren't a list of imperatives is because each of these pairs are what we call merisms. And what on earth are merisms? Well, I'm glad you asked. A merism is when you place two opposite extremes side by side to cover both polarities and everything in between. And we still do the same thing in English. Let me give you an example. If I were to say to you, let me give you the A to Z of it, it means that I am going to give you the whole thing, even though I have only mentioned our first and our last letter. And so Solomon is giving us a table that is meant to convey just the totality of human experience, the whole A to Z catalogue of our seasonal existence. And so if that's what this table conveys, then when it comes to life, what life is like, then what is Solomon saying? Solomon is saying that life is like a pendulum of time. A pendulum where the activities on the one side are good and the activities on the other side not so good. And over time, the pendulum just keeps swinging you side to side. Some days you're laughing and smiling. Other days you're crying and dying. You know, and some days you'll either be swung both ways in a single day. Welcome to verse 1. Welcome to what life under the heavens. Welcome to life where there is a time for everything. I'll never forget the day we found out we were pregnant for the first time. You know, it easily remains one of the happiest days of our lives. When the obstetrician said that there were two heartbeats, I remember clearly that Charmaine's bottom jaw almost hit the floor. I believe it's called twin shock. And we were given some of the ultrasound pictures which we took with us to show Charmaine's grandma. It was a beautiful day. And in her old age, grandma was just amazed that in these pictures that she was able to see these two little girls that she was soon to meet. Charmaine spent that whole afternoon talking with grandma about everything that yours truly would now have to do. And yet later, when she got back home, we received a phone call. It was grandpa in tears on the other end of the line, and grandma had suddenly died later that same night. We couldn't believe it. You know, it's like in one day that pendulum had swung both ways. It was like verse 4. In the morning, we were laughing and dancing. And in the evening, we were mourning and weeping. It was like the opening line of a Dickens novel. It was the best of times and it was the worst of times, all in one day. And so here is the point of Solomon's song. He already spelled it out for us right back at the start of verse 1. In life, there is not just a time for good things. There is a time for everything. Life isn't lived in a positive, progressive line. It doesn't keep getting better and better. It is far more like a pendulum. As we learn the hard way that day, some days it swings forward. Some days it swings forward over to the good side where we get to smile, and other times it swings backward. Sometimes time swings us over to the bad side where we get to cry. For every positive extreme, there is a negative extreme, and of course, everything in between. And because we just keep swinging backwards and forwards along the spectrum, it makes it really hard to make any sense of it. I remember once seeing in a war movie a group of soldiers get punished for disobeying their commanding officer. And military officers, you know, they come up with the best punishments, don't they? It's like a gift. He punished them by getting them to spend a whole day moving these heavy rocks from all around the military base back into a big pile in the middle. And well into the night, they finally finished this pile and they waited beside it. They were like smiling and high-fiving, for they were so relieved that it was finally over and what they just achieved. Only to hear their commanding officer then call out, "Now it's time to put them all back." Which is when the smiles and the high-fives disappeared. For in that moment, he broke them. And if Solomon were on the couch beside me eating popcorn, watching that movie scene, he would point to the screen and say, "Exactly. Life imitates art. For that scene is verse 5 to a T." Sometimes in life you are scattering stones, and sometimes in life you are gathering stones. Time is like an existential pendulum. It seems to cancel itself out. Which is why, just like those soldiers, Solomon too is broken. Which is why he asks this question straight after the song. In verse 9, what do we gain, or what do workers gain from all our toil? For even if the season you are currently in is exceptional, Solomon and you both know eventually it will swing in the other direction, which raises another question. If we're all just like little kids stuck on a big swing, then who is pushing it? And I know human beings like to write poems that pretend, or think at least, we're in control. Like Invictus by William Ernest Henley, which says, "We are the masters of our own fate." But Solomon says, "We're not." Henley, you must be kidding. For if we were the ones pushing the swing, then we would never let it head into negative territory. I mean, take Henley, for example. He had a leg amputated and lost a child who was aged 5. So do you think if he was the one pushing the swing that he would ever have pushed it there. Not a chance. Which is why Solomon uses his own poem here to say to the likes of Henley and anyone else who tries to make out that humanity is the captain, clearly we are not the captain, clearly we are just passengers. And so if we are not pushing the swing, then who or what is? Well, we're left with just two options. Fate or God. They are the two options, and Solomon goes with the latter in verse 10. For there he says, I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. And you think knowing that God's the one pushing the swing would provide some comfort. But Solomon says it doesn't. He says, knowing God's holding the pendulum doesn't help. If anything, it adds to the burden. And the reason why it adds to the burden is spelled out for us in verse 11. For in verse 11, he says, even though God does everything right, even though he makes everything beautiful in its time, the problem is none of us know what he is doing. Quote unquote, no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. And so have you ever asked God, what are you doing? Well, Solomon says, me too. This is the heavy burden God has laid on mankind, for this is what trying to come to terms with life is like. Welcome to the existential nightmare. And so just before I start to give this message a happy ending, let me summarize Solomon's problem for you in a nutshell. If timing is everything, if timing is essential to getting life, to getting everything right in life, but you don't know what God is doing, if the swing keeps moving, but you're not sure of the direction that God is pushing, then not only will things keep happening that you don't like, you also have to keep making critical decisions blind. And things, if they keep happening to you that you don't like and you keep having to making decisions blind, then it becomes really hard to make any sense out of life. That is Solomon's problem in a nutshell. That is the heavy burden that he says God has laid on humankind. And this is where we learn that time isn't merely chronological, it is also theological. Time and the uncertainty of life teaches us what we should have always known, that we are not the ones in control. In fact, if you know anything about Adam and Eve in Genesis 3, you would know the moment that we thought we were the ones in control was the moment we lost control, which is why we now live in a world that's out of control, a world that is uncertain, ever-changing and unstable. That is the bad news, but here is the good news. And Solomon already summed up the good news in just one word in verse 11. Eternity. For with that one word, Solomon destroys the pendulum. Because God has set eternity in the human heart. And so as you do your best to hang on to what feels like a pendulum as it keeps swinging backwards and forwards, deep inside there is an instinct that says life was never meant to be and is not like this. That in the midst of all the burdens, uncertainty, there has to be eternity. And that instinct that is deep inside, that voice, whatever you want to call it, was set there by God so that you wouldn't have to view life as an existential nightmare. so that you wouldn't have to go through life in a constant state of despair, but you could actually go through life really content, because regardless of how many times that you're swung over to the bad side, you can see life from an eternal perspective, and seeing it from that perspective changes everything, because eternity buys you time. Well, not long after I'd finished uni, I headed over to see as much as the United States, or as much of the United States as I could with a mate in just 5 weeks. And what I came, or what we came to discover, is that America is a really big country, which meant every day we'd have to get on a bus or a plane to try and fit it all in within our 5 weeks. And so this meant a lot of late nights, a lot of early mornings, and it also meant we were in a constant state of exhaustion. I can clearly remember by about week 3 that I was even starting to fall asleep while tour guides were still talking to me. Now, they'd even laugh at me. It was ridiculous, or as Solomon would say, it was meaningless. And despite all of the travel, I remember waking up one time, at least on the flight home, thinking to myself, what just happened? Now, I didn't really take anything in. I didn't really get to enjoy it. I just spent the whole time exhausted. And why? Because I didn't have enough time. Friends, not having enough time makes it really hard to enjoy life. Really hard not just to enjoy our holidays, but really hard to enjoy any day, let alone every day, which highlights the timeless need for eternity. Which is why eternity means being able to live life like verses 12 and 13. It means being able to actually be happy and to do good, eat, drink, and find satisfaction. It enables you to really take life in and enjoy the simple things. And why? Because it gives you time. Eternity means you get to see everything in life as a gift from the hand of the good God you get to spend forever with. And it is all thanks to Him, the one who has set eternity in your heart so that you would know life is to be lived in light of forever, not merely trying to hold on to a cold, meaningless pendulum. And in verses 14 and 15, Solomon finishes by reiterating much of what he has already said, saying words to the effect. Verse 14, God is the one who exclusively determines our season and days. It is not us, and it is not fate. No one or no thing has any say. And I think the NIV in some ways complicates verse 15, but here's how I read it, that even when history seems to repeat itself, God is still the one who is doing it, for long ago He predetermined it. And so Solomon ends his section on time by reiterating God's absolute and exclusive control of it. And so how does that offer us any comfort in life when we have as many bad days as good days, if not more? Well, the truth is, knowing God's in control of the seasons that come into our lives, knowing that He is in control of time, it doesn't offer us any comfort, or at least it wouldn't, had He not entered it. And knowing that He entered time, even though He transcends time, it makes all the difference, which of course brings us to Jesus. It is significant when the Apostle Paul speaks of our salvation in Romans 5, he makes reference to time. In Romans 5, verse 6, Paul says this, For while we were still weak, at just the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. So why was it the right time? Because it was while we were still weak and ungodly. And so what does that timing reveal about God? It reveals that he used his timing to demonstrate the magnitude of his timeless love. Miles Davis is right. Timing isn't the main thing. It is everything. For the reality is that if God had waited until we were worth dying for, you and I both know he would still be waiting. In Matthew 16, verse 3, Jesus criticized the religious leaders for not being able to interpret the signs of the times. And so what about you? Do you see what he came to do and what it says about him? Do you see the season of his ministry? Do you see while he was here, he demonstrated that it was a time to heal, performing healing miracle after miracle? Do you see that it was also a time for him to weep as he wept outside of Lazarus's tomb and over the fate of Jerusalem? Do you see it was also a time for him to speak, teaching with authority that was unprecedented? And that there was also a time for him to remain silent when on trial before Caiaphas and Pontius Pilate? He remained silent like a lamb about to be slaughtered so that he'd be crucified. And even though Isaiah reports the abuse he received for your and my sin marred him beyond human recognition, as ugly as that is, the salvation it now gives, it shows us that God does make everything, even the most ugly things, beautiful in its time. So friends, do you see the seasons of Jesus' ministry and what they mean? Because his cross is what God used to smash the pendulum and to open up eternity. Acts 17 says that God has determined the time for everyone to live in history so that we would seek him. So is that how you are spending the time that you have been given? Because time is limited. Friends, spend your time seeking Jesus and making the most of every opportunity. For as Ephesians 5 says, these days are evil. Friends, let's pray.